here first, folks. Lane Kiffin fired after last night's loss to Arizona State. Can't say I was surprised, as I put it on my bold predictions at the beginning of the season. I think I even mentioned, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, but I may have even said somewhere around week 5 in one of our conversations around about Lane Kiffin, whether or not he was going to get fired, laid off. We won't say fired, we'll say laid off.
Forced to resign.
Forced to resign, yeah, yeah. What do you think? Is it a surprise to you, Andrew?
Well, it's more of a surprise to me than you, and I'll have to go back and I'll look at the tape to let you know if you actually said week 5. And as you know, this is the Fourth and Short podcast at fourthandshort.com, and I'm Andrew Brown, and of course you are.
Will Patton, the prophet, Will Patton the prophet.
Yeah, man, don't let it go to your head. But you know, I don't know. I'm a little surprised, honestly. You don't really see coaches fired this early in the season too often.
Yeah, it's pretty early, but it was a pretty nasty loss.
It was. Supposedly during the game, it was middle of the game, the athletic director called a meeting and just said, let's fire him now.
It was in the middle of the game?
In the middle of the game. And so when they got back to L.A., the team got off the airplane. Lane Kiffin followed the team into the bus, and on his way into the bus, the athletic director met him there and said, hold on a second. Lane Kiffin said, hey guys, wait for me one second. I got a quick meeting here. And the athletic director said, no, you go on. And Lane Kiffin actually left his bag on the team bus. Team bus left him, and Lane Kiffin was fired at the LAX airport.
Wow. That is crazy.
Pretty crazy. Didn't have a ride home.
Yeah.
He was just anticipating that he was going to be going back to the USC campus, but he will be going back to the USC campus on to clean his desk out, though. So that's, you know, it is surprising to me. I really thought that they would actually do better than they did so far, and, you know, I didn't think that they would fire him in the middle of the season like this. It's not something you see very often, but, you know, like you say, the interim head coach is going to be Ed Orgeron, who had been the defensive line coach, and he's the former head coach at Ole Miss, and he had a very sterling record there, if you go back and look. So they have big things headed for them this season, but I think they're pretty much trying to hold on to the recruits that they have.
Yeah. Any idea, have there been any names floating around about who would take his place?
Well, John Gruden, of course.
Really?
But... Well, I mean, John Gruden's name is put out there for coaching vacancy. Yes. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's too early, but I mean, it is USC. They can get a lot of people, and yeah. You know, you'll hear Nick Saban's name thrown out there, I'm sure, at some point. But there's no way he goes there. I don't know. I mean, it could be any number of people. I think that you're going to look for somebody who's kind of the opposite of Lane Kiffin. Probably somebody who's a little bit more older and proven, probably not quite as much of a brat as Lane Kiffin is. Somebody a little bit who can control a press room. That's one thing that Lane Kiffin, you know, he lost games and stuff, but he alienated the media in L.A. He alienated the fan base because he was just so brash, and that kind of thing doesn't play well to a big media town. You need somebody who has a little bit more media savvy. So that definitely will play a factor in.
Yeah. So... But really, not too much to say until we get more information. But
right, and I think that you can pretty much close the book on this season. If you're firing your coach this early, that means that you expect to not do anything the rest of the year. So it's going to be interesting to see how.
I mean, they still have really their toughest games left to play.
Sure, sure.
I mean, you got Notre Dame still on the schedule, Stanford, UCLA.
But now that being said, Notre Dame lost yesterday and didn't look particularly good. So, I mean, you could beat Notre Dame.
But yeah, Notre Dame is still better than a Washington State or an Arizona State.
Sure, that's true. But once again, you got to remember, USC has plenty of talent.
Yeah, true.
So, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, you could conceivably win a bunch more games. You could go 9-3 this season, and then, of course, you have to think about keeping Ed Orgeron. I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, you'll see what goes on.
Yeah. Well, besides the happenings going over on the West Coast, there was plenty of stuff happening on the east side of the country to keep us entertained, or not, depending on how you look at it. We'll start with FSU. FSU played Boston College this week, and they had a bit of a scare. I was at the LSU game in Athens, LSU Georgia game in Athens, and it's actually pretty neat, and I wish that they would do this in the ACC stadiums. I don't know if it's just a Georgia thing or an SEC thing, but during timeouts, they actually have kind of like game breaks where they will show, like, they'll show a, you know, another game that's going on at the same time, and they were going back and forth between the Notre Dame game and the Florida State game, kind of flipping back and forth between which one they were watching. And whenever the Florida State one was coming on, especially earlier in the game, Boston College had a little bit of a lead on them, and
yes,
for a little while.
Yeah, well, and I will say, you know, they do that at Dope Campbell also.
Okay, but okay.
Anyway, the point I would like to make is that, yes, it was not a good start at all. I mean, at one point it was 17-3. So Boston College came out firing, and FSU is just kind of asleep there for a little bit. It was kind of surprising, and I really thought that it would be the opposite. I didn't think that BC really had much that they could offer, and it's interesting in the post game, a couple of the players, it could have been Famous Jameis, I'm not sure who it was, I read, said, we didn't expect them to be as good as they were. So, I mean, it kind of seems that they were kind of asleep at the wheel there. And it got to where I was a little bit nervous, you know, because they were moving the ball, and FSU just didn't seem to, it didn't seem to be working. And I think as the game went on, I don't know if you saw this, Will, but at halftime, it was still 17-17 until the last play of before the half, and James Winston threw a Hail Mary for a touchdown. So that kind of changed it, and that was a huge play. And I really question where you would be if you didn't have that kind of lucky play.
Was it a touchdown like as time expired?
Yeah, they snapped the ball with 1 second left. The clock was moving, and he snapped it right before it went to zeros and hailed it out there, and it was caught for a touchdown. So that was a big momentum shift, because if you're Boston College, you have kept this game tight. You got up early, and you were able to weather the storm and go into halftime at 17-17. That's a big moral win.
Oh, yeah.
But instead, you have this one, you know, kind of quote-unquote lucky play that you give up.
Yeah, that is a very low percentage play.
Right, and I think it was a big, very, very deflating. But I think the big question, and I mentioned this after watching the game last week when they were playing Bethune-Cookman, who is not really anything, the quarterback being able to move around in the pocket and the defense just not really picking up their assignments very well. It looked like, I mean, the quarterback, Chase Redding, I believe he's a senior, so he's played a few games before, and he looked like he had command, and FSU's defense was very hit or miss. And you have a lot of really, really high-profile athletes, a lot of speed, a lot of size. I mean, I've said it on the podcast several times. You have a lot of speed on this team.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't – it's not translating. I mean, you gave up 34 points to a BC team that's – not really that great. A BC team that got destroyed by USC. You know, I'm very concerned about Clemson.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game. Clemson's really, really good. So, I mean, I think that at the beginning of the season, you pegged that as a game anyway that's going to be close. But if FSU is having these types of problems against a team like Boston College, and, you know, maybe they did just come in, they overlooked them.
Right. And it's true. I mean, it's a road game. And see, that's the thing. If you remember last year, FSU had a lot of trouble on the road. They were one team at home. They would put up huge numbers. And on the road, they seemed to struggle. Mm-hmm. So is it the same issue? You know, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. And Maryland, next week, this was the game that everybody circled. And at the beginning of the year, we both said that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Maryland is next week. Maryland has looked good.
Yeah, and kind of looking at Maryland, you know, they shut out West Virginia. What did Virginia do this week?
They beat number 11 Oklahoma State.
Yeah, like pretty good.
Yeah, 30-21. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It looks like Maryland has a pretty good offense.
Yeah, who knew?
Who knew? Yeah, never saw that coming. If they can put up big points, you just don't want to get into a shootout every week, and that's what I'm concerned is going to be the problem here at FSU.
Yeah, that game's at noon at Florida State, I believe, next week.
Yeah, it's a home game, so that's helpful. But like I said, you don't want to get into a shootout every week, and your offense is capable of putting up big points, but. You know, you kind of question where the defense went. The defense was very strong last year. You have new defensive coordinator Jeremy Pruitt. Some people were questioning his hire. Really young guy. He's never been a coordinator before. You know, is he in over his head? I don't know. It's too early to tell, but we'll see a lot in the next couple of weeks whether or not.
Yeah. Another big game that was this week, and arguably the biggest game of the week, was LSU at UGA. And I was at this game, Andrew.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
We spoke about this.
We did. Will, I don't know. You remember we asked our listeners to email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, because fashion advice.
Right, fashion advice. Well, I think some of our listeners, I mean, look, I really believe we have some of the most intelligent listeners in the podcast, you know, blogosphere.
Yeah.
But I think some people misunderstood the question, and the idea was that you were going to wear some ridiculous outfit. I mean, I was really rooting for the pink Power Ranger outfit or something.
Yeah.
And we did have a few. Did you see the email asking you to wear the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles full body costume?
Yeah, I saw that one. That was appreciated, but I couldn't find my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle full.
Yeah,
costume.
I think those kind of things. I'm not sure they're only in the small sizes these days.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That good idea. We appreciate, you know, our listener who thought of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, interesting idea. Also, the person who said you should dress up like a Bengal cat. Okay, listen.
Yeah, I don't want to get killed.
Yeah, let's not get crazy here. Funny, I guess. Haha. But you know, whatever. But some people didn't really understand. They were saying that you should wear red. That's not the point.
Yeah, it got a little bit hijacked, and we had about, I don't know, 12 or 15 emails of people telling me that I should wear red. So I think we know who those listeners are and who their allegiances align with.
Yeah, well, they didn't understand the concept.
It's okay. I mean, we'll give them a pass. I mean,
right.
They are, you know.
And some people did. Some people gave us some pretty good feedback, or at least some interesting feedback.
Yeah.
Did you go in the Jedi robe, Will?
No, I didn't want to further the stereotype because,
Yeah, that would probably be too much. Okay, well, you know, once again, a good idea. Maybe next time.
I was really hoping for some Justin Bieber stuff. I was ready for that, but no.
You mean you have your Justin Bieber outfit?
I have my outfit. I have my baggy pants and
the Garth Brooks mic and everything?
Yep, everything.
Wow.
But anyway, let's get back to the point here.
Right.
I wore gray. I wore a gray shirt, a t-shirt, and pants, normal pants. So I guess that's fine. I was neutral. Nobody said anything to me.
Nobody talked to you the whole time?
Well, people spoke to me, but nobody said anything to me about
I thought they were just, like, not talking to you. That'd be rude.
So anyway, I was at this game, and it was very, very interesting being at this game, Andrew. Because, obviously, you know, I'm all about, you know, yelling what's the good word and whatnot, but I was there with my girlfriend, who is a UGA grad, so I had to be civil, so I decided that I wasn't going to pull against the team in Athens. So I decided to be neutral, and it's not like I really have any love for LSU either. I really kind of can't stand Les Miles.
Well, now come on, Les Miles—he eats grass.
Yeah, I saw that, but so
you saw him eating grass?
I've seen the video.
Okay.
But anyway, I went to this game being completely neutral, and it was really interesting being at such a big game where pretty much so everybody in the stands has a team that they want to win. Like, every single person is pulling for somebody, and I'm just standing there, and I felt like I noticed the weirdest things when I was at the game. Like, I don't know, like, while everybody was, like, eyes were, like, trained on the field, like, waiting for the next play or something, I would see, like, a bird fly by. I'm like, I wonder if that bird's going to try to land in the stands with all the fans there. Like, you know, I just noticed, like, weird things like that. Or, you know how a lot of times when you're watching a game, you kind of fix your eyes on the ball, like you just follow the ball.
Right.
I was like watching individual players. Like I was just kind of like okay, I'm just gonna watch the safety and see what the safety does. And I don't know, it just made it interesting. I felt like I was able to kind of not enjoy the game better, but kind of see
you get a different appreciation for
it. Yeah, a different appreciation. And I will say that when it came down to the end of the game, because it was a back and forth, very, very exciting game all the way to the end. And when LSU had the ball in their last possession, trying to go for the game tying or game winning drive there at the end, it really was one of the more energetic atmospheres I've ever been in a college football stadium. It was pretty intense. It was very, very loud, comparable to Clemson or something like that. And it was pretty cool. It was enjoyable. I mean, it was just to be in the atmosphere, to as a fan of college football, I had an appreciation for the game itself. So,
now, here's my question. Where does this put UGA? Where do they go from here?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, we talked about it last week or last time around, and UGA really has had one of the most difficult opening, first four games of the season that I've ever seen, starting off the season with three top 10 schools.
Well, now, also, let's just kind of caveat there, asterisk. I think as we'll talk about this later, but I'm not sure South Carolina is nearly as good as we thought they were.
Well, yeah, but you could say that, but I mean,
it has been a tough schedule. I will, yes.
Yeah, it's been regardless, even if they're not really a top 10 school, like they're still good. I mean, it's you can't ignore that. And Spurrier has they've had their number for the past several seasons, so
right.
That was a tough game. So, but in terms of where it puts Georgia, I mean, it's as, I don't think the Clemson loss matters in the grand
really?
Scheme of things. No. I think if they win out, and depending on what happens in the rest of the league, if there's other one-loss teams, if they win out and they would be at the top of the list for the one-out, one-loss teams, just because if they win out, they'll go to the SEC championship game, and that would assume that they would beat Alabama. So if there's other one-loss teams, they'll be on top of those one-loss teams.
Sure, absolutely. But here's my question. This is what I thought about yesterday. Okay, let's say that Clemson wins out. Uh-huh. Clemson wins out, wins the ACC championship game, doesn't lose a game. Oregon doesn't lose a game. They're 1-2, or they're 2-3. Okay, then Georgia would be probably 4 at this point. Let's just say that those are the only two undefeated. So they're 2-3. Georgia's number 4, and then Alabama's number 1. Georgia beats Alabama. Do they get stuck at 3, or do they? SEC? Do they overturn? Do they hop an undefeated?
There's no way they could hop Clemson. I mean,
right.
Because Clemson beat Georgia, so there's no way that you could make that argument. And Oregon, if they keep playing the way they have, Oregon has looked so dominant in every single game that they've played in,
right.
I don't think that Oregon would drop either.
Okay,
so.
Now then here's my other question. Oregon goes undefeated. Georgia has the one loss. Clemson loses, let's say Clemson loses, one game. Somewhere along the way. A good loss. Loses to FSU. Yeah, loses to FSU, but then FSU loses, two games. It's not going to happen, but let's say that happens. So Clemson is a one-loss team. Georgia's a one-loss team. And who goes to the national title game? Clemson or Georgia? Does Clemson go?
Man, that's tough.
I mean, the thoughts that were going through my head yesterday. And then the question becomes, what was your benefit in playing Clemson? What if the Clemson loss keeps you out of the national title game? The amount of vitriol that Georgia fans will have with Clemson at that point, I can't even begin to imagine.
Yeah.
Because that's a game that I've always been told through my whole life is that it's impossible to go undefeated in the SEC. The SEC is too hard to go undefeated through. That's why, you know, that's why we never go to the national title game, because the SEC is too hard. You can't go undefeated. Well, let's hypothetically say you go undefeated in the SEC, but then
For the rest of the season, I mean, they've played their tough games in the conference.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the loss that you have, you're going to go – you have a good chance, a better-than-average chance of going undefeated in the SEC.
In the regular season.
In the regular season. I mean, you have a good chance. I mean, you have as good a chance as anybody does at playing Alabama. Now, then the other thing would be if LSU plays Alabama and beats Alabama, you got to give the nod to LSU in the SEC title game, just because usually a team that loses, not always, but a team that loses has kind of an edge.
Yeah.
In the rematch. Now, when we played Clemson in 2009, that obviously didn't happen. So not always, but it seems like traditionally that would happen.
It happened 2 years ago when LSU beat Alabama in the regular season. And then...
Exactly. I mean, Alabama just, you know, waxed them. So it's a very, very interesting scenario, and so many things. And we have so much more football to go. Like, that's the exciting thing, is that we have so much more to go, and we're already getting a lot of really interesting stories in this season. So I think that this is going to play out very interestingly. Of course, all this, you know, could mean nothing. I mean, Georgia could lose to Florida and then it doesn't matter. But right now, it seems very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. The last game, Andrew, that I want to talk about, and unless you have anything else to say about the LSU-Georgia game.
Yeah, I don't. But, yeah. I mean, I think this last game we talked about, that Wake Forest is just such an interesting program. It really is. And I'm glad that we're going to spend some time talking about them.
I'm sorry to you Wake Forest fans out there, but no, we're not going to be talking any more about the Wake Forest team in
Boise.
This podcast. Yeah, I'm sorry to the Boise State fans out there as well. Andrew is leading you astray, and I told him before the podcast not to do this, but he insists.
I don't listen.
He doesn't. I think he's just delaying the inevitable, because we had to talk about this game at some point.
Right.
And we put this last because we thought that our mood would be a little bit...
I just felt like once we started talking about it, it's going to be hard to veer to other things.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, on Thursday night, the Yellow Jackets played Virginia Tech at home. 100-year celebration at Bobby Dodd. And it didn't go so well. And they lost 17-10. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you know this. And I walked away from that game thinking several different things.
Okay.
My first thought was, we aren't any good.
Okay.
That was kind of my first thought is, well, I will say this, on defense, we did look good. It was really interesting, and this is 2 years in a row that this has happened while playing Virginia Tech, is that our defense kept us in the game. Last year was a relatively low-scoring game as well against Virginia Tech, and it was the same way this year, and our defense was keeping us in the game. And think about it. They scored off of a turnover that we had at the beginning of the game. They had, what, like 20-something yards to go for the touchdown, and they scored it in just a few plays, but it was a short – it wasn't like a long, sustained drive or anything. It was a couple of good, quick plays where they kind of caught us off guard, and all of a sudden they have a touchdown. Other than that, they have the one touchdown drive in the second quarter. And besides that, I mean, they didn't really do anything on offense the entire game. They got a field goal, and that's it.
Right, right.
The whole game. And it's been a theme with our team, with our defense all year long, is that we tend to, in the three conference games that we've played so far this year, we tend to give up some runs. It's baseball season. We tend to give up some points early in the game, but our defense makes some adjustments, and all of a sudden we're playing like a very, very capable and strong defense, which is what happened in the game on Thursday night as well. So I will give some props to our defense. Playing shorthanded at that, we found out before the game that we lost Golden for the year.
Yeah, which, for the year. That's going to be tough.
That's a very tough loss for the year, and it showed in our return game, just in terms of how much we missed him. But I will give props to our defense. They played well against, you know, whether or not you say that Virginia Tech has a good offense, I don't know, and I'll get to that in a second. But the other, so I did walk away feeling okay about our defense, but on offense, at first I was like, we're not any good. And I think the most clear sign of that was we were having so much trouble snapping the ball in the first quarter. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, can you think of a time, Andrew, when we've had that many false starts?
No.
In a quarter, in the game.
The issue, and see, we have a little bit of a different opinion here, I think, which is good for radio. The issue in my mind with all those penalties are, look, they were Virginia Tech knew your snap count. They knew when you were going to snap it, so they were running beforehand. They knew snap count.
That's what. I mean, we might have the same opinion, because what I was noticing, and I haven't watched the replay of the game. I probably won't watch the replay of the game. It was painful. But from my seats in the stands, I don't know what his name is, but it was number 17 for Virginia Tech. He is kind of a safety, linebacker, hybrid kind of guy. He was blowing – you're right. He knew the snap count, and he was blowing through the line on every play – early in the game.
Right. And so what do you do when people know the snap count?
You change the snap count.
Okay. The problem is that your offensive line was false starting. Now, the question is, why are they doing that? It seems to me that means when you practice, you never varied the snap count when you were practicing. You always just snapped it at the same point, and so that, because you anticipated that people weren't going to, you know, weren't going to, I don't know your snap count or something. And so people knew your snap count, and so you never practice otherwise. So then when you go to change your snap count, your offensive lineman, who's, you know, your offensive lineman are 300-pound guys, they have a big motor. They are conditioned, because they've snapped it at one every single time. They're conditioned to go at that point. And if you just say, hey, we're changing it to two now, it's going to be a little bit harder than just saying we're going at two if you never practice a varied snap count. So my opinion is that more than likely they didn't practice a varied snap count nearly enough in practice, so that when it came to a big game, they just weren't ready to do it.
Yeah.
And then what do you do when the changing of the snap count, which is just what you think you need to do? I mean, after four plays, I saw it. I was like, oh yeah, you got to change the snap count. If you can't do that, you're just stuck. You're just kind of stuck there, either changing the snap count and getting false starts all the time, or just kind of going with it and hoping you can block the guy. And that's not a good place to be in. And that becomes a very, very much, in my opinion, very questionable. Like, why did you not coach this concept of changing the snap count so that you are prepared so that you know eventually somebody is gonna figure out or tap in your snap counts to be quick enough to get blow through the line. And, you know, I guess the thought is, well, it doesn't matter. You can blow through the line and then you've over pursued, but they were quick enough so that they weren't doing that. They were getting right to the quarterback, and it killed the whole system.
Yeah.
How many plays to the outside were there?
There was very, very few plays.
Very few, because you couldn't pitch it. The only times he was pitching it to the outside was just a called pitch, where it was quick enough to get outside where the line didn't matter. But you couldn't run that traditional triple option play and then have the outside, because they were getting to the line so quick that Vad didn't even have a chance to get it to the outside. So there was nothing to the outside. So then it's just, okay, B-back dive or Vad running it on that QB follow, which, I mean, Vad didn't have any yards rushing. I mean, he wasn't able to move the ball at all.
Yeah.
You had a few, the one thing, you did have a few of those V-back dives that did go for some yardage.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the opposite of what we've seen from Virginia Tech in the past.
Usually
kill that V-back. They just kill the V-back, and the V-back doesn't get anything. And that's what I expected to see, and I guess that's what the coaches did too. But they were pretty much giving you they said, okay, we'll give you that six, we'll even give you 6, 7, 8 yards on the B back because you're not going to get anything else.
Yeah.
And you didn't. You didn't get anything else. And my questions then become, okay, if you remember, you can go back and look at the tape. Paul Johnson at the end of last week said, okay, we're getting back to the basics. We don't run anything well, so we're going to simplify things. All right, at the time, it didn't really send any signals to me. After about one quarter, I was just like, I know we're not going to run any diamond. I know we're not going to run any pistol, and they know it too. You told them you weren't going to run it. You told them we're going to run our base play. We're not going to run any diamond. We're not going to run any pistol because we don't run it well enough. And sure enough, we didn't run it.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that we didn't try to change something up and run out of those other formations.
Even in the last drive, you get the ball back after, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it. You get the ball back after a miracle, you know, still having a chance to win the game. And what are you doing? You're still three-step dropping when everybody knows you're going to pass the ball.
Yeah.
Where's the pistol at that point? Why, you know, we don't need the pistol against Duke. You know, this is the game you need it in. This is, you know, on TV, they're sitting there telling you how this team can't throw the ball because all they do is three-step drop. And you didn't disprove that. You didn't disprove it by winning the game either. So you're just running a three-step drop when everybody knows you're going to throw it, and that's what you're doing. You're trying to throw it. The defensive line was already in your face when you took those three steps back. The pistol would have been – you didn't see the pistol until it was 3rd and 13 on that last two plays.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That to me is very, very – I don't know, very questionable.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough, and there was several times where I definitely questioned the play call on many times. Going for it on 4th and 2, like the, you know, 20-something yard line or 30 – like low 30-something yard line, basically that set up their missed field goal, which was the miracle. That was interesting that we would try to do that when your defense had been holding them all game.
Right.
And what did that result in? I mean, we were – one of the problems that we had the entire game is that we were pinned pretty deep the entire game. We never started out with good field position, maybe
right.
A couple of times.
And there's where you really missed golden at that point.
Oh, exactly. With punt returns, because there was a lot of punting in the game, we were never really able to get a good return just because we didn't have – we didn't have an electric guy back there.
Right.
So, but I do think, though, that we need to give credit where credit is due. And the reason for all these problems that we were having is that Virginia Tech's defense is legitimately good.
Sure. They have a good defense.
There's no doubt about that, that they are a very good defense, and we simply weren't prepared for their defense. And at the beginning of the season, or when we were talking about this game and it being on short rest, you know, the question is, who does that benefit the most? And at the beginning of the season, I kind of said, well, that benefits us because they have less time to prepare for us. But yeah. I don't think that they really need that extra time to prepare for us. I think Bud Foster has them coached up in a way. They know how to defend our offense. And they have the athletes and the talented, you know, experienced athletes on that defense to not be to be fooled by our offense. So I really think that the short time period was worse for us than it was for them in terms of we weren't able to adequately prepare our offense for their defense.
I mean, it would seem that way.
And it's just so frustrating because, like, why is that game played on a Thursday? I just don't get why that game is played on a Thursday. Why can that game not be on a Saturday? You know, I really think if that game is played on Saturday and we get a little bit more time, you know, it could have been a different game. It really
well,
could have been.
Well, I'm not sure I agree. Look, you're going to – you self-imploded over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you're going
to – You could call the short amount of rest, you know, part of the reason for that.
Well,
I mean, we didn't practice in pads all week. We were practicing shells the entire week. So.
But when you play North Carolina, you fumbled the ball 4 times and just got lucky. Okay. And that's something that, you know, at the time I said, okay, man, that's stuff you got to clean up. You know, you're gonna recognize.
It's also the weather. I mean, it's pouring down rain.
Sure. Well, you could say that until you played Virginia Tech on Thursday in clear weather and you fumbled the ball 3 times. Yeah. So, and you got lucky still, and there was a fumble that you were able to get back on. 2 fumbles, I think, you were able to recover. Yeah. But you, the times when it really mattered, you weren't able to get on them. So I think that you have a big problem with ball security. Your offensive line over and over just was whiffing on that defensive line. And they didn't have any answer for it. They had no answer. And so it was pretty much, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to stick to it. And, you know, I don't understand when the defensive line is beating you so badly, why you can't just get in the pistol and throw the ball a little bit. Because they were daring you to do so. They were there was nobody. They had everybody. The receivers were in single coverage.
Oh, yeah, the entire game.
The entire game.
And they were giving the receivers a very, very large cushion, too. I was wondering why we didn't run that that smoke route that we like to run. We didn't really run that at all the entire game.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of times where, I mean, you might not get 20 yards off of it, but you could get 5. And there was a lot of times where we could have really used 5 yards.
Yeah, I mean, so. You do that, you bang, you 5, 5, 5, 5, 4 times in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to open up your run game. And I was reading some stuff and people were saying that, you know, Paul Johnson just, he wants to run the base stuff and prove that the base stuff is going to work. You know, I don't know. I have no idea. But I just don't know why you don't throw some of these short passes when obviously your offensive line is just getting whiffed over and over and over. And your quarterback doesn't have the time to make the reads. And he's struggling to make the reads anyway. You know, he's a young quarterback. He's struggling to make the reads. And so he's moving a little slower. And the offensive line isn't giving him the time to make the reads.
Yeah. So there's obviously some problems and some stuff that we got to get worked out. And I guess one of the benefits to being on a Thursday is we get a couple extra days to get ready for Miami, which now becomes even more important than it was before because you can't lose that game and have any sort of shot at the ACC championship game. I mean, last year you lost Virginia Tech at the beginning of the season, and there were some other circumstances, but the Jackets still had the best tied that had the best record in the division. So it's not over. It's not the end of the world. Virginia Tech hasn't proven to me, especially on offense, that they are capable of winning out. There's some games in their schedule that they could lose.
Well, so, I mean, they don't play Florida State. They don't play Clemson.
They do not. You're right.
So that's going to help them for sure.
That's going to help them for sure. But I still don't think that they are invincible.
No, I don't think so. But they do have an easier road than Miami or Georgia Tech or anybody else.
Very true. But the game against Miami is really, really important. Of course, we're going to talk about this more in the next podcast. But it has become almost a must win for the Jackets.
Sure. And here's the thing. In a big picture, would you say it's a must win on a larger scale than just this year? And here's why I say this, and I'll just go ahead and kind of lay all the cards out there, is that you played on Thursday night. It was, like you said, all the 100 years anniversary, blah, 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 big deal, okay? You had a stadium full of people who all expected to win, okay? This was the point when a lot of people said, okay, like, you know, we're gonna show everybody that we are back to where we were in 2009. You know, we went through a tough time. We've got a quarterback who's going to lead us again. And our defense is better. Special teams is better. This is going to be it. This is the quote-unquote coming out party for us. We are going to be back after this game. You got a stadium full of people who thought that. You had all your letter winners for the past who are living. Coaches who have coached at Tech. All these people here. And, you know, you look pretty bad. You self-implode. You self-implode. Yeah. You know, you have all these false starts, which you never should do at home, ever. and you just don't look good, okay? If it was a different game, I would say that, you know, oh, well, it's one loss. But based on the scenario that you were playing in, I think that loss becomes bigger in the minds of most of the people who were sitting in that stadium. Do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I mean, it was a pretty bad loss. And I think it is made bigger because of the circumstances surrounding the game. But to answer your question about Miami being big for other years, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that Paul Johnson is on the hot seat this year. I think,
you have too much of a buyout. You can't afford it. I mean, that's just the nuts and bolts of it. Is that
we can't afford it. We can't afford it, for one. And also, I don't know. There's a lot of things. I feel like you get a little bit of forgiveness sometimes when you have a young quarterback. But,
well, you know, I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here. But, you know, you would say that you had the forgiveness. When does that rub off? Because the last time you beat Virginia Tech was 2009. The last time you beat Miami was 2008. The last time you beat Georgia was 2008. You wash out Clemson in 2011. When was the last time you beat a team of consequence? 2009.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're beating teams that are, you know, lesser talent than you. But anytime you line up against somebody who is equal or better, probably better, I'll say. I mean, I think probably Miami might have better talented players. You, for whatever reason, you're not getting it done. And it's not consistently the same thing. Like, it's not like, well, every time we line up against them, we know that our offense is not going to play well. Because that's not true. I mean, you play Miami last year, you put up a lot of points. So, I mean, it's a different thing every year. But at the same time, it seems like, you know, you are losing to these teams, and you really have to win some of these games. At some point, you have to beat Virginia Tech. You have to beat Miami. You have to beat Georgia. You have to win one of those games.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're paid to do. And people are going to have a lot more forgiveness in their hearts if you win one of those games as opposed to beating, you know, Duke. That's not something that people look at and say, well, you beat Duke, you know, we'll keep you around. So, I don't know. I think that you really, really need to beat Miami. Because after that, the only other game of significant consequence that people would say that circle before the year starts is the Georgia game. And, you know, that doesn't have any bearings on the conference race. So, you know, you really need to win one of those games. You've already not beat Virginia Tech, so you really need to beat Miami.
Yeah. And again, we'll talk about this more as we get closer to that game. But, yeah, I agree with you. It's an extremely important game. And so is Clemson. So is Georgia. I mean, if you go 0-4 against your big rivals, and I would say that Virginia Tech, Miami, Clemson, and Georgia are probably the four teams that you want to beat every year you want to try to beat. Yeah, if you go 0-4 against those guys too many times, you're gonna get yourself in trouble.
Right. I mean, it was a different time when Chan Gailey was coach. He did beat Miami. Mm-hmm. He did do that consistently.
Yeah.
And once again, like I said, it was different times. Miami was definitely not in the same position they are now. But those kinds of wins, beating a team like that does give you a little bit more wiggle room. And at some point, you've got to win some of those games. And you know, right now, we all thought this year we would be better. This year, you've done nothing that you didn't do last year so far. So at some point, you've got to change the tide. You've got to do something different. Last year, you beat North Carolina. Last year, you beat Duke. Last year, you beat your 1AA. So at some point, you've got to do something different so that people will kind of get excited about this team and say, okay, this team is for real. And you do have one more chance of that. I mean, I'm not saying it's your only chance, but you do have another chance of that next week. So
yeah. I agree. And Miami moved up slightly in the rankings. They're now 14. So you can knock off a top 15 team and win all your fans back. So
right.
Saw that with Georgia after they lost to Clemson. They
right.
So they were about to jump off a cliff, and then they beat South Carolina, and everybody came back. So
right, and like look, it's early in the season still. There's, you know, you're not gonna know, you don't know how bad or good this loss is until much later in the season. You can look at it and say, okay, well, Virginia Tech didn't lose; they lost to Alabama, and that was their only loss. So they're a pretty good team. You know, I mean, if you look at that at the end of the season and say, you know, that was a pretty good team, that's one thing. So hold off on your torches and, you know, pitchforks right now. I think that that's something. Just let the games be played.
Yeah, I completely agree. Completely agree. Okay, well, with that, let's wrap up and go through the other games for this week real quick. See how we did. First one is Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech, since that was the first game of the week, and we both picked Georgia Tech, so we were wrong in that one, unfortunately. Right. Maybe we'll do better next time. The next game, Miami at South Florida. Miami looked really good against South Florida. But South Florida is really bad. They're 0-4 really, to start off the season.
Yeah, South Florida is really bad.
So, but one thing to note, Miami loses their quarterback. So,
yeah,
you know, does that mean anything for us next week? I hope so. Stephen Morris has not. He is the reason that Miami won last year for sure. He's a very good quarterback, but they also have Duke Johnson, and
right.
he's still around. So we'll see, and we'll talk about that more in the next one. The next game we both got wrong: East Carolina at UNC.
Yeah, that was a really shocking game.
Yeah,
because East Carolina looked a lot better than UNC.
Yeah, East Carolina is really good, and at first I was like, oh man, our win against UNC means very little now. But then it kind of made me think, well, you know, Virginia Tech really struggled against East Carolina. Like, maybe East Carolina is actually pretty good. Like, yeah. I don't know.
You know, here's the thing. It's hard to tell from any one game.
Yeah, you can't
an implication.
Really
you know,
can't really compare.
Yeah.
It's apples and oranges.
It's absolutely. You know, you play, you got to remember, Wake Forest beat FSU, I think it was 12-7 a couple years ago. I mean, does that mean that FSU was terrible? No, they went on to win 9 games. So I mean, it wasn't like, you know, but hey, they lost Wake Forest. So you gotta be careful at isolating a single game and saying this is, it means this, that, or the other. You just don't know.
Yeah, yeah. The next game is Virginia at Pittsburgh. This was a little bit different from what we've seen from Pittsburgh this season. Pittsburgh has been scoring a lot of points, and this one wasn't like that at all.
No, they put up 2 touchdowns early in the first quarter, and then they played Chan Gailey ball and just sat on it.
Yeah.
And successfully sat on it, because Virginia didn't do anything.
They got a field goal.
Do anything. Yeah, so very interesting defensive struggle there from Pitt and UVA. I was surprised by that. I thought it would be more of like a 28-21 kind of game.
Yeah. So, but we both picked Pittsburgh, so good for us. The next game is Troy versus Duke.
Duke had to come back in this game. They got down early and then put up some points there. David Cutcliffe is a great coach, but I mean, it is Duke. You know, it's a tough place to win.
Yeah, it was pretty close. 38-31 was the final score in that one, which you kind of expect, you know, an ACC team to play better against a team like Troy, but I mean, you're right, they're Duke. So
right.
And they go on to play Navy next week, so it'll be interesting to see how.
Ooh, yeah, that will be interesting. Navy lost this week, but that will be an interesting game. Navy always plays Duke tight.
Yeah. Next one, Central Michigan at NC State. NC State didn't really seem to
Nothing to see here. Yeah, nothing to see here. You know, just Central Michigan isn't that good, and NC State won. Yeah. What do you expect?
What do you expect? Let's see. FSU, Boston College. We talked about that. Closer than it probably should have been, but
yeah.
FSU still.
FSU offense is still really, really good, and their offense is going to win them some games. You know, like I said, you just don't want to get into a shootout every week.
Yeah. And the last game for the ACC is Wake Forest at Clemson. Clemson looks really, really good.
Yeah.
Beating the snot out of a team that they should be the snot out of. But Clemson is the real deal. There's going to be some interesting games going along for them. Maryland, FSU, Georgia Tech, there's some, you know, some tough games that they have to play left in their schedule, but as for right now, they look like there's very, very few weaknesses on that team.
Yeah, they are gonna put up a lot of points every week.
Yep, they sure are. So that is for the ACC. The next ones are in the SEC. South Carolina at Central Florida. Man, we said that this was going to be an interesting game just because Central Florida likes these types of games.
Central Florida, man, they really love this big rivalry. They have this mentality that, hey, people don't respect us, but we can go into anybody's stadium and we're going to give them 60 minutes of football. And they did. They came out swinging and they got up early. South Carolina had to battle back and ended up putting up a bunch of points in the third quarter. I think it was 28-14 because Central Florida had gotten up like 14-0. So they put up a ton of points. And then Central Florida came back and battled back into the game again. And so it was tight the whole game. And, they did lose the game, but you got to give Central Florida credit. They played a tough, tough game. And, I think that they have a really good chance in their conference of winning some games this year.
Yeah. So 28-25 was the final score in that one. South Carolina gets a big scare.
Big scare. They also, I don't know if you knew this well, Connor Shaw was lost in that game. He's out for 2 to 3 weeks. I think he hurt his back. I'm not exactly sure what. But, yeah, so that's – you don't want to lose your quarterback heading into the big SEC games.
Yeah, they have – luckily for them, though, they kind of start off with some easier SEC games. They have Kentucky and Arkansas the next 2 weeks and then Tennessee. So not really any of the tougher – most of their – the rest of their tougher SEC games are a little bit later in the schedule. And really the only tough one they have is Florida in terms of ranked teams.
Well, speaking of Tennessee, Tennessee is terrible. Absolutely terrible.
That's the next game. So
South Alabama played Tennessee and played them tight. And if you're Tennessee, you don't want to be playing South Alabama close.
No.
Because that means when you get to the games, it means something. When you play Alabama... I don't want to be there at the end of October when they're playing Alabama because it's not going to be pretty. Tennessee is terrible.
Tennessee wins 31-24. I mean, that's not something.
Didn't look good. No, didn't look good at all.
Sunbelt team.
Yeah, not a game you want to play close.
Yeah, the next game on the list is LSU and Georgia. Andrew, you picked LSU to win this game.
I did.
I picked Georgia mainly because of home field advantage, and I felt like that was the difference. I really feel like if that game is played in a neutral field, LSU might win that game. There were some times where Mettenberger had made some really good changes at the line of scrimmage and made some big plays out of that. LSU had a lot of big plays in that game, and it was close fought, came down to the very end, and it kind of reminded me a little bit of the 2009 ACC Championship game where you really just were waiting for someone to stop the other team, and it really wasn't happening. And
right.
Then finally, Georgia stops them at the end of the game, and that's really all they needed to do was stop them right there. So
yeah, I mean, my question is this indicative of UGA's defense? Is UGA's defense really not that good? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know, and I don't think LSU's defense is very good either.
Right, I don't think so either. I think that both those teams, their offense is going to carry them as far as they can go.
Yeah, so because Georgia's been giving up some points this year. Granted, they've been playing very tough competition, but they haven't really been the best in the world in terms of giving up points. They gave up, 38 to Clemson. They gave up 30 to South Carolina. They gave up 21 to North Texas, but there's some other
reasons. Yeah, a little asterisk there.
And then 41 to LSU. So that's a lot of points scored against your defense in the games that they've played. Georgia plays Tennessee next week, so probably shouldn't give up nearly as many points in that game.
You would hope not.
Yeah, for their sake. Next game, Ole Miss, Alabama. Alabama shuts them out 25-0.
Yeah, I thought it would be closer than that, but
me too.
Alabama's defense is suffocating.
Yeah.
Absolutely suffocating.
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
Next game, Florida versus Kentucky. Let's see. I didn't get a chance to watch that game. I don't know if you saw it. Florida wins 24-7.
Nothing to see there. You know, it was what you would expect from a game between Florida and Kentucky. I think this is like 27 straight by Florida in that series.
Yeah. the quarterback that came in for Driscoll, Murphy, had a, I would say, a pretty decent game. He went 15 for 18 passing, which is what you want out of a quarterback in that position. And then they just ran the ball. They had a running back go for over 175 yards. So,
Kentucky's terrible.
Yeah, and Kentucky's terrible. So that's the main thing. Texas A&M at Arkansas. Did you watch this, any of this game?
You know, I did not. I did not really get a chance to see it. But, you know, it's what you would expect to happen.
Yeah. Arkansas scored a few more points than I would have guessed. 45-33 was the final score in that game.
I don't think A&M's defense is much to write home about. But
and, you know, this is really interesting because besides Alabama and their defense, I've not really seen much out of the SEC defenses this year. It's kind of weird. I feel like all of a sudden the SEC, which used to be...
grind them out, hard-nosed defensive struggles.
Yep, most of those games were relatively low-scoring, and now we're seeing a lot of really high-scoring games coming out of the SEC team. Yeah. So it's almost like there's been a culture shift.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, we're going to score points. And the interesting thing, I remember when Urban Meyer was hired at Florida, so many people saying that, well, it won't work here. It won't work in the SEC because he runs that spread, and you can't, we're too fast. Our defenses are too good. It won't work here. Now, you see all these teams running, you know, versions of spread and putting up a lot of points, and it's very interesting that it is changed that much.
So, maybe that'll be a talking point when we get deeper into the season, we have a larger sample size.
Yeah.
Is our SEC defense is really that good?
Right.
So, next one, Arkansas State at Missouri. Nothing to see here. Missouri wins. And the same thing with UAB and Vandy. Vandy wins.
What's Vandy's record now?
What are they, 3-1?
Yeah.
Is that what they are?
Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting to see. I mean,
3-2.
Here's my question about that is, how long is James Franklin going to be at Vanderbilt? You know, is that a destination job to him? Does he want to make a name for himself at Vandy?
Hey, there's an opening out there in the West Coast.
Exactly.
Really?
I mean, is that, yeah. I mean, he's not what I said earlier. I mean, I said you want a kind of a old school guy, but I mean, Los Angeles needs somebody who's really good with the media and likes to talk and likes to hear himself talk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, James Franklin fits the bill there.
Yeah, he sure.
So
does.
I mean, I don't know if James Franklin, you know, thinks that he's going to be an SEC guy the rest of his life, but you know. If he can do what he's done at Vandy out in L.A., that's going to get some recruits' attention if he flies in with a helicopter and comes see their game. You know, that's the kind of stuff you have to do because you got to remember in L.A., there's so much sports media that you've got to scrape and claw to get attention on your program. And I really believe that he's going to do stuff to get his name in the newspaper every day. And that's what you got to do if you're in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I don't know if maybe that's somebody that you might think of. It's not a big name, but let's be honest. A lot of those big names, Chris Peterson at Boise State isn't going to go to USC. You know, Nick Saban isn't going to go to USC. So you got to find somebody else who could make a big splash and could be somebody who would be good with the media and win games that way. And you know, he might be it. So
what about Chad Morris, Clemson?
I mean, it's an interesting idea, but my thing is, if you're USC, you believe, and rightfully so, that you are one of the top programs in the country, you should be able to get somebody who's not a coordinator, somebody with previous head coaching experience. That's the knock on Chad Morris. I think that he's going to have to go to a kind of a mid-level program to get his first head coaching job.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be totally off base. I mean, they might say, let's go get him, but that would be my opinion because you don't know how he is. I mean, he's good as a coordinator, but as a head coach, especially in L.A., you have to be really smart with the media. You don't know any of that about Chad Morris. You know, he might not be able to do that kind of stuff. So you know what you get with a head coach. You know how they are with the alumni, and you know how they are when they get in there on their, you know, their call-in shows. How do they interact with fans? Do they get people come to their games? You don't know that with a coordinator because they've never had to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure you – if I was somebody, I wouldn't want to learn on the job at USC. You know,
lot of pressure there.
I mean, look, at USC, they could go out probably and get an NFL guy. I mean, call Pete Carroll up, see if you can get him to come back. You know, I mean,
no way. Yeah, they love him in Seattle.
Right, right. I'm being facetious there. But, I mean, look, Pete Carroll came from the NFL. You could go get an NFL guy if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that does it for the wrap-up. Andrew, you went 13-3 this week. I went 14-2. That puts your record at 77-15, mine at 74-12.
So, you're slowly, you know, pulling away from me.
Pulling away just a little bit. It's just three games, so that could change in a week. Yeah. So
I don't know. You need to start picking more upsets, Will.
Okay, maybe next week. Maybe next week. So, well, anyway, that's all the time that we have for today. Sorry if it's a little bit long. I don't think we meant to do that, but that's okay. It just means that you got to listen to us for a little bit longer.
They've probably already turned it off, so
yeah.
There's nobody listening at this point.
There's nobody listening. Very true, very true.
But if you are still listening, make sure and shoot us an email, forthandshortpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please, please do so. And that does it for this week. Tune in next time where we'll talk about the week 6 lineup. And thanks for listening.